Well, my opinion is Damian Williams is not back, and you should not play him. My opinion is it's fucking fool's gold.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized, hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field. So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. My name is Nick Walsh. I am your host tonight, and I am here with my good friend who is enjoying the slow descent into his first Northeast winter in a couple of years. I'm here with Matt Rogers. How you doing, dude?
Hey, what's up, Walsh? Yeah, I wasn't sure if the weather was getting cold or I'm just feeling cold from the fantasy season slowly coming to an end, because it's getting very scary out here, and the cold is definitely settling in.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's a little, we talked about this last week, a little bit more for you than me, because I'm fucking really doing great this year, but it is what it is.
For people that don't know, I spent the last two or three winters in Los Angeles and Arizona, and recently moved back to New York, so this is it's a bit of a shock to the system, but always good to do a recap podcast with the same group that did the preview podcast the week before, because that's gonna just make me feel a lot colder.
Yeah, we can talk about all the shit that we got wrong. it'll be nice and good. The Texans Jaguars game. Jesus, we were wrong on like everything there.
Wait, I wasn't too wrong on that.
Okay, maybe it was just me who was super wrong on that.
I think I was like, I think I said I don't like anything in
London. Oh yeah, no, that's what it was. You were right. You were right.
Yeah, I was like, I don't like anything in London games but tight ends, kickers, and defense, and like everything else makes me scared.
Yeah, and I was like, no, dude, I'm pretty sure like Jaguars got this shit. Like Jaguars are gonna do real well, and then they come out and play like the worst game that they've played all season.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you texted me that I was right Sunday morning, and when you just brought up the London game, I was like, Walsh is about to publicly say how I'm right. You were just like, we're both fucking wrong. I was like, dude, no, what?
I'm sorry.
It's the only thing I got right.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I will publicly say it right now. Yeah, no, Rogers was extremely right about the London game. I was extremely wrong. If you guys haven't realized it by now, we're here for the Week 9 recap. It is a day late than it normally is. It should be getting to you on Thursday morning here. We will be previewing the Thursday night game later. But then I believe it's going to be Don and Vinny. So you got the classic Vaughn cast bringing you the preview this week. Lots of intuition, lots of feelings. it should be a fun one. I think they'll be recording it during the Thursday night game. And again, just for timestamp sake of when this information is, so you guys don't accuse us of not knowing things that we should. It's Wednesday night. The Warriors are currently playing the Rockets. They're hanging in this game at halftime. Oh, wait, no, not really as much anymore. It's 52-63 at halftime. The Warriors are playing a skeleton crew of people. I'll stop talking about Golden State Warriors basketball. Rogers, you got any overarching thoughts before we jump into the news for this week?
No, man, let's do it.
All right, sweet. First piece of news. I put this first just to piss you off. Mark Walton suspended for 4 games from his offseason arrests, of which I believe there were 3, after kind of like a disappointing game. But Mark Walton suspended. Obviously, Kenyon Drake is gone. That leaves Kalen Ballage, seeming like he'll be the workhorse. There was word that they were going to bring in another running back. To this point, they have not done so. So the other guys on the roster are Patrick Laird and Miles Gaskin. Do you care about this at all?
Well, going forward, I don't. But for everything else that has happened, if you listen to that preview podcast last week, yeah, this whole situation fucked me. First off, I think a Jay Ajayi reunion would be really, really funny.
Yes, correct.
In Miami, that would be cool. At first, when Mark Walton's suspensions came out, I was like, whoa, I know it was the offseason. Why didn't I maybe know about this like you do with other high-profile fantasy players? And I was like, wait, why would this have been a factor to anybody up until like the last 2 weeks anyway?
Yeah, he was literally like not even on the fantasy radar when the season started.
Yeah, as you, if you listened last week, you know that like of my 6 leagues, I owned Mark Walton in 5 of them. I started him in 4 of them. I like optimistically talked about how it made sense and it should happen. And I still think it kind of made sense, but oh boy, did that not work. If you watched that Jets Dolphins game, I hope you didn't, but there was one run by Mark Walton. I think like I sent you a video of it, Walsh, where he was like on the 5 yard line and Dolphins ran some weird ass like draw play. And he just like ran right into his offensive lineman's ass via like butt fumble style and just weakly fell back for like a 4 yard loss. And that just summed up like the entire play and the entire call for me all week. So I don't think it matters. I think actually it's good because you can just, if you had any stake in Mark Walton, you can feel good about just like getting rid of it completely. So I actually like the clarity of the situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it simplifies your decision-making in that Kalen Ballage like should not be started anywhere. I know running back talent like doesn't matter as much as running back volume, but Kalen Ballage, as far as this year, like has looked like maybe the worst running back I've ever seen. You know, I know they use him on the goal line or they have used him on the goal line, but the guy has looked absolutely terrible. You know, all of one, like anyone's eyeballs as well as like Pro Football Focus and that sort of thing, I'll sort of agree with that take. So I think this pretty much means no Miami running backs until further notice in terms of playing them. I'm fine with like someone owning Kalen Ballage, but please don't play him.
Yeah, it's the running back climate that he should be owned. But again, like to your point, don't do it. And it's not a great matchup going forward. They'll talk about that in the preview probably. But yeah, fine with the stash, but it sucks.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned that video, which was very, very funny. I think the only funnier video that I saw from this season in terms of football was, did you see, I forget if it was this past week or the week before, the play where like, the Bucks were in shotgun and Breshad Perriman came running across the formation in front of the quarterback pre-snap. They snap the ball and they give it to the running back, and Breshad Perriman just trucks the running back running across the formation and tackles him behind the line of scrimmage.
So I saw that in passing and didn't know what it was, and now it makes a lot of sense and is hilarious. And also I'm surprised Breshad Perriman is not out for the next 4 seasons after that hit.
Dude, that guy had the funniest touchdown catch. Did you see that clip this week?
I did see that. That was funny.
just Jameis is trying to fit a throw into like a fucking, you know, a fucking window the size of a toenail clipping.
It should have been picked.
Yeah, absolutely. It should have been picked. And it just gets popped up in the – and like to Perryman's credit, like he hustled after it to like get it. Like once it got popped up in the air, but just like so fucking funny, man. Anyway, we'll get off that topic and move on to the next bit of news, which is AJ Green is expected to return in week 10. It's also Wednesday, and he was expected to practice in full today, but he just didn't, and, like, no reason was given. I'm on record as saying I don't think he plays the entire year. Do you buy that AJ Green is coming back this week?
I can't really speak to it. I just wanted to make a quick funny note that the first two people we mentioned in the week 9 recap was Mark Walton and Breshad Perriman and Kalen Ballage.
That's three really people.
Yeah, fuck three you. People. I realized it after. I realized Kalen Ballage is so inconsequential that I forgot about him as far as I don't know if I buy if you're AJ Green, if you're the Bengals, if you're anybody involved in the situation, it should just be done for the year. There's no reason for it. They haven't traded him. They didn't trade him by the deadline. So just like cut your losses. I think it's kind of what you're saying is that he may be healthy and good to go, and like they're trying to work him out there. But if you're AJ Green personally now, why would you do anything? Your trade value will not increase whatsoever. You could just risk re-injury. The Bengals are obviously shit, and I agree with you that I think they'll flirt with it for a while and then they'll just rule him out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm AJ Green, I'm telling them, oh no, like my leg hurts, you know? They're like, AJ, you're cleared to play. He's like, no, my leg hurts. Like that's the way I'm like dealing with this.
That's how it should go.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for him to play. The fact that they didn't trade him at the deadline is insane to me. But
the only fantasy relevance that I would say for this would be if you were a guy that has held on to him all year, do like a hard blitz of pennies on the dollar to trade him for anything right now. Like, if you've had him for these 9 weeks and you've been hoping that he'll come back, there, this might be the most hopeful that he has a blip of fantasy value whatsoever. So the fact that he's practicing and may play, trade him for literally the bottom guy on someone's bench and whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'd be trading him for Ronald Jones, for Marquise Brown, for like anything you can get, you know? Like,
yeah, that's the only fantasy relevance I really see here.
Yeah, I think to emphasize that a little bit more too, I mean, we know that Ryan Finley will be the starting quarterback, presumably the rest of the year. Ryan Finley in the preseason had a great completion percentage and only threw checkdowns. AJ Green is not a checkdown receiver. AJ Green, in terms of him coming back, I think the only thing that he does is draw coverage off of Tyler Boyd and allow Ryan Finley to check down to Tyler Boyd even more than he was already going to. So as a man who owns a prolific amount of Tyler Boyd, I hope he does come back because that would be good for me. But I don't think it's going to happen. I see no reason, like, logically for it to happen. Then again, it's the Bengals. It's hard to factor in rational decisions there. If you held on to AJ Green, one, why? Two, fucking, you know, hope that someone else is higher on him.
Yeah, and imagine being Ryan Finley right now where it's like, okay, we're giving you this chance on an 0-8 team. And maybe one of the best receivers in football plays, but he's not going to be here next year. So, like, force feed him or don't at all. Like, what do you – that sucks.
Yeah. It's like also your offensive line is made of, like, PVC pipe to held together with duct tape. You know, it's not a great situation.
That's a good fantasy team name for me in one league.
PVC pipe held together with duct tape.
Yeah. It's accurate.
Fair enough.
That's my own thing.
All right. The last bit of news that we have here is the Eagles signed Jordan Matthews. Does that matter even a little bit?
No.
Cool. Let's move on to the injuries. Evan Ingram, mid-foot sprain, did not practice Wednesday. I was not aware of this injury until today. But apparently it's, you know, mid-foot sprain is not something that is generally a good thing to hear. Because it goes hand in hand with Lisfranc, which we all know, or Lisfranc. I don't know fucking how it's pronounced.
Well, are you going to be like a French-Canadian douche, or are you going to just be like a guy that doesn't know how to pronounce it is the way I look at it?
Lisfranc.
Yeah, Lisfranc, Angerie.
Yeah, I'm a French-Canadian. I called him Ballage before. I don't know. Yeah, if I was going to go with Lisfranc, I should have said Ballage before. Yeah. So I'm being logically inconsistent, I think, but what can you do? The point here is that Evan Ingram has a midfoot sprain and he did not practice Wednesday. Just talking as the Giants as a whole, Sterling Shepard is also not practicing. They were talking about maybe putting him on injured reserve. You know, that sucks. Him and Brandon Cooks are sort of on the same page in terms of that, and it's really upsetting and sad, but as people who need to make practical things out of this, how do you deal with the rest of the Giants offense?
So I just want to say first, kudos to the Giants as a selfish fantasy owner, where they had the Monday night game last week, and I was a guy that may have had to start Sterling Shepard.
They announced it before the early games. They announced
it at like 10:30 or 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time that he was going to be ruled out, and like that saved my ass, even though I still lost my fantasy matchup. But like, you know, just kudos to them for doing that, even though I highly doubt we were factored in. As far as the rest of the Giants offense goes, I was a guy that like flirted with Darius Slayton in the past and stuff like that. I think that if both of them don't go, I feel better about owning guys like Slayton. I'm fine with owning Slayton. I think he's like a fringe own, even in like a 10-team league. But I think he has higher upside than a lot of other guys that are like wide receiver five types. I think Darius Slayton could flirt into startable range against the Jets if both of these guys don't go. I think Sterling Shepard still could have a chance to play just because he's not going to practice whether he goes or not. And like you said, I think that he may end up going to IR and they'll rule him out for the year. But I'm saying Slayton is a guy that I'm cool with. Cody Latimer is a guy that like I raise an eyebrow at. But other than that, like I don't think it really affects the Giants at all, because the clear-cut guy like Saquon is, and Daniel Jones, you know what he is. I don't think Daniel Jones is really affected by it, really, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Golden Tate becomes a must play as opposed to like a questionable play, particularly against the Jets this week. I agree with you that Slayton and Latimer, I mean, Slayton's running more routes. He looked bad this past week. He looked great the week before. So, like, I don't know
what to make of it. And he looked bad, and he looked awful the week before that when he was in this situation. So it's really a dice roll.
I think the two guys that I'm looking to roll, you know, outside of Saquon are really just Tate as like a definite. And then I think you can stream Rhett Ellison. The week that Engram missed, which was week 6, in fairness, almost the entire Giants roster missed that week. So like there was a lot of, you know, usage to go around. But in that week that Engram missed, Rhett Ellison played 100% of the snaps and got 7 targets. If you're going to tell me there's a tight end out on waiver wires that's going to get 7 targets this week and I'm, you know, streaming or desperate at tight ends, like, I'm fucking picking that guy up right now.
Especially on a 16 bye. Like, I completely agree with that.
And against the Jets.
Yeah. Like, on paper, Rhett Ellison, even if he's, like, tight end 12, the way this tight end climate is gone, he will outscore, like, a bunch of what you perceive as must-start tight ends. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, him putting up 7 PPR points is better than like a Greg Olsen or guys that like bottom out kind of like semi-regularly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's a guy that I'll probably end up playing a lot in daily for like the salary to like open up other things. But yeah, Rhett Ellison, definitely a guy to keep in mind this week, which is not a name that we say every week.
Yeah.
All right. Adam Thielen. He pulled a Sammy Watkins this past week. He played 7 snaps and then re-aggravated his hamstring injury, leaving you with a big fat zero if you did play him. He is expected to miss week 10 against the Cowboys. The Vikings in general, we'll talk about them later, but Thielen, you know, keep him on your bench. I don't know that you need to pick anyone else up from the Vikings there.
Yeah, I agree.
My motherfucking boy, Preston Williams, sent to the IR with a knee injury. Preston Williams actually, so he had 4 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown. I know this because I played him across every daily lineup of every site, which I was playing on 4 different sites and had about like 20 different lineups in.
Yeah, you bitched and whined.
Yeah, I know I did.
And he came back in.
He came back in, so he hurt his wrist. He went to the locker room. He came back in, and then he hurt his knee after that, which was like the serious one. So he is now on IR. I'm sad because I think he's really good and I like him a lot. But I mean, I guess this opens up opportunities for Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki.
Yeah, I agree. It was funny because during our preview, like afterwards, when you were talking about Preston Williams and whatnot, and I was like, dude, what, like, fucking chill. And then I like looked at a bunch of matchups and I was playing against Preston Williams and Devontae Parker in a lot of leagues. One of them you had Preston Williams against me, and I was like, oh shit, I'm like going up against a lot of this. And then it completely worked out and like fucked me, and I was just like, damn it. But that's just like my own personal thing. What do you think about Albert Wilson as like a flyer, like wide receiver 5, and like the same sort of idea?
I mean, if I was going to pick up another Dolphins wide receiver, he would definitely be the one. I don't think you really need to go that far.
Okay. All right. I like what you said with Mike Gesicki. I'd rather play Rhett Ellison or own Rhett Ellison in a vacuum for like a week-to-week basis, because hopefully you don't need like a long-term tight end if you're picking up Mike Gesicki.
Right.
But I'd rather own Rhett Ellison in the waivers, right? Would you agree?
I think I would, just because of the matchup this week, and I'm not sure exactly who. Hold on, who does Miami play? They play Indy, don't they?
Yes.
Okay, so, yeah, I think I'd probably rather be on Ellison, but I don't really hate Gesicki this week. I think he's definitely going to be like the number 2 option in that passing offense. Behind Devontae Parker, which, you know, both of those guys are like athletic, inconsistent people.
Way I would look at it, not to like jump ahead of the preview, but like if those two tight ends, Rhett Ellison and Mike Gesicki, are there, and you had to pick one to get you 18 points, who would you pick?
I think Gesicki for 18, yeah. But I think Ellison, okay. Ellison for a floor.
Now, what if I said like, well, you need one of these tight ends to get you 7?
Yeah, that's Ellison.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so that's just, I agree with you, but that's where I'm, that's how I value that.
Yeah, just for some perspective here, Gesicki had six targets. He caught all six of them for 95 yards. So, I mean, like, you know, obviously I think he'll get a little bit more target share with Preston Williams out, but like six, catching all six targets for 95 yards feels like kind of his ceiling outside of touchdowns. So yeah, don't get like terribly excited about him.
Yeah. Keep in mind too, that if you watch that Jets Dolphins game, that the Jets defense that day was pretty much like our college flag football team flight school.
Yes.
Like it was just terrible. So yeah. Anyone could have done anything.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Let's move on past the Dolphins to Cam Newton being placed on IR with that same foot injury. You know, we said like maybe he would be back at some point. It's the Kyle Allen show. You know, DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel both had pretty good weeks this past week. I think what this does is limit their ceilings and you know, sort of make them floor plays if you are playing them.
And that's what it's been.
It has been the entire year because Kyle Allen is very, very good at executing Norv Turner's system and is not good at doing anything more than that.
Right. I mean, we've talked about like whack-ass backfields. Very rarely is there a whack-ass receiving core where it's like a lot to go around, but any week, like one of these guys, whether it's I'm talking like Greg Olsen, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, one of these guys will get you like 18 points and the other two will get you like 8 or 9 and it's fine. But like, nothing really explosive and certainly nothing that you drafted either of those guys for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was, you know, probably out of the five of us, I was the heaviest on the two of them and it hasn't worked out like I wanted it to. You know, I don't think that's necessarily, you know, my assumption was Cam being at Cam level, like, you know, past year's Cam levels. And
yeah. And it hasn't been bad. It just hasn't been as explosive at points as you would want. Like, DJ Moore's floor is fine, but I definitely, you know, thought that DJ Moore would have fantasy weeks in the top 10, you know,
at
his position. And Curtis Samuel, same. And he has, but, you know, not with any sort of regularity. There's not a high ceiling there at all for either. They're both bona fide low-end wide receiver threes, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I still say there's one week this year where Curtis Samuel is going to catch, like, all of the deep balls that come to him and he's going to end up with like 112 yards and two TDs, but fuck me if I know what week that is.
So, right. So. Exactly. It'll probably come in the worst matchup.
Yeah, seriously. So you brought up in this case, Cam Newton's on IR. His contract expires after the 2020 season. They would owe him $21 million and they could save $19 million by cutting him, I believe. Do you think there's a chance he gets traded somewhere like Chicago that might be looking for a quarterback?
Yeah. So I was talking to my friend, John, who's a recent listener to the podcast. He's a Bears fan. I'm a Packers fan. So I regularly say how terrible the Bears are. And it's been great lately, obviously, which we'll get to. But he was like, he's always been a Trubisky truther. And like just today for the first time, I was like, Trubisky sucks, right? And he was like, we may go get Cam. And I was like, oh, here's like some guy being overly optimistic. And I started reading up on it. And there is some truth to it. It would make sense for the Panthers to – he's only 30 years old. This isn't really fantasy relevant, but I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up trading, you know, for pennies on the dollar, if you will, for something with Cam there, like you said, with the cap space. And teams like Chicago make a lot of sense. Denver make a lot of sense. There's destinations where I think Cam still has a career ahead of him. And I think that it was more his decision from what I've read to get shut down for the year than the Panthers possibly.
Interesting.
I think that from what I had read that he was kind of getting into a luck scenario where he like just didn't care as much anymore and he wasn't getting healthy and that foot wasn't healing. And I just think that he needs a change of scenery a little bit and somewhere like Chicago can make a lot of sense for him.
Yeah.
Denver can make a lot of sense for him.
You mentioned Denver. That was the one I was talking about this with some coworkers today. Denver was the place where I was like, he's going to end up like a fucking Bronco next year. Like, yeah. That's how it's going to happen. Chicago, I think, makes a lot of sense too. Cincinnati, I could see as a destination. But I mean, Cincinnati is likely going to end up with, you know, Tua or Herbert or that kind of thing. So
yeah.
We'll see. But on sort of, again, not fantasy relevant, Cam being placed on IR made me really, I think, sad at a personal level because Cam at prime Cam is one of the most exciting players that I've had like the pleasure of watching in my lifetime. I can't shake the feeling that that Cam is gone forever, and that makes me sad.
Well, that Cam, I feel like, is definitely gone forever. And to your point, too, I felt like other than that MVP year where people were kind of like force-fed the fact that he was awesome, like he was always underrated still.
Yeah.
I feel like whether it's the fantasy community or the NFL community, until he just like shoved that MVP year down everybody's throats and then that like fumble in the Super Bowl against the Broncos, that was like not his fault, but sort of was his like banner, I guess, for lack of a better term, like for that year for Cam haters. I agree. It was everything that you wanted like Mike Vick to be for like a 5-year stretch. It was everything you wanted like RG3 to be. And Cam just like took it to another level. And yeah, I agree with you.
The second part of that was thank God we have Lamar to like carry the torch as just like a running quarterback who is like fucking awesome to watch, because I need at least one of those guys. And yeah.
And you know what's still go on. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say not you know, like I really had that moment today where I was like, fuck, like I don't think I'm ever going to see like prime Cam Newton again in my life. And like, yeah. It just made me really sad.
And you know what's wrong is like, I know people that are like Lamar Jackson haters, or at least were a little bit.
Those guys can fucking suck my cock at this point.
Yeah. Jesus okay. Christ. Yeah. Slow down. But when it was like week 2 or 3 of the NFL season or preseason, when those haters for Lamar Jackson come out, who do they cite as a comparable player? It's always like an RG3 or you know, whatever. No one ever brings up Cam because Cam was just an anomaly.
Yeah.
Cam was a pocket passer as well as could get those rushing touchdowns and rushing ability. And people always cite like poor passer ratings. And yeah, at the end, those poor passer ratings were coming at the price of like 600 yards rushing and 7 rushing touchdowns in a crazy year or whatever it is. I'm spitballing on those stats, but you know.
Cam's also the only quarterback where people designed, instead of, you know, like on the read option, the designed play would be the running back would go up the middle, and then if that wasn't there, the quarterback would take it outside. For Cam, there would be plays that I forget the exact name of it, whether it was the inverse option. I'm sorry. The inverse read option, where the design is the running back to go outside, and if that's not there, Cam keeps it and just runs it up the gut. Like
right.
Cam was like a fucking fullback, like as well as a quarterback.
Yeah, and Cam's fall off, if you're gonna actually be a jerk off and call it a fall off, is because how much he got beat up.
Yeah.
Beat up carrying the ball. So I agree with you. You will never see, I don't know if you'll ever see for a long time another type of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson could be better and just as good, but he's a different style.
Yeah, he's more comparable to Vic than
Yeah, right, exactly. But the Cam Newton, just you'll never see him again. So I agree. Yeah.
All right, now that we've waxed poetic about Cam and gotten emotional about that, sorry about that, guys, but we're going to move on to Jacoby Brissett. Sprained MCL, he left the game. Obviously, Brian Hoyer came in. The team seems optimistic that he'll suit up this weekend. He got in a limited practice this week. Is it cynical to say that, like, I mean, like, Jacoby Brissett's obviously better than Brian Hoyer, but, like, I don't know that it matters that much in terms of the rest of the team, which one of these guys suits up, and I don't think you should play either one this week.
I was literally going to say the same thing, so I'm glad you said it. I don't think the rest – Jacoby's better. Jacoby's ownable and maybe startable, not this week, but if healthy in other situations. But if you're playing Colts, this situation doesn't affect you.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to another Colt. Paris Campbell has a fractured hand. He will miss some time, so this week is going to be Zach Pascal as the number one. Chester Rogers, and then Deion Kane will likely round out their 3-receiver sets. T.Y. will likely not be back till week 12. Devin Funches might be back in week 11, which we will talk about.
Don't say that name. I was just getting off Panthers that kid had in the past.
I think the point of this is Zach Pascal. Like, I mean, you know, we're past waivers at this point, but Zach Pascal is like a solid play, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Caught a touchdown in 3 of his last 4, if I'm not mistaken. Especially when Hilton's been out, I'll double check that while you talk next.
But, yeah, I mean, Pascal had 6 targets this past week. I believe he caught 5 of them. And he's a guy, you know, take it for what you will, but he passes the eye test. Like, he's looked good. And that goes back to last year as well, where he's looked good.
I was going to say that, and he's, like, looked decent with limited opportunity in better wide receiving core, better quarterback play, better situations, like when Ebron and Doyle were more of a factor and shit. So, like, I'm a believer in the talent. Yeah, I think that's about it. And like you said, they're coming up with Miami. I want to see what the rest of their schedule is in the short term, just to see. He should be like one of the number one waiver pickups this week, though, I would think, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, in terms
of terrible ownage.
Yeah, in terms of wide receivers, like, I tried to pick him up. So we're recording this on Wednesday night. Every league I'm in except for one, the waivers go through Wednesday night into Thursday. The one league where they don't, he was my number two wide receiver waiver pickup, only because Marquise Brown was somehow not owned, you know?
Yeah.
He's right there. I have a question about preemptory pickups. Funches should be back in week 11. Do you have any interest in that as like a 1 week early to make sure you get him type of guy?
No. And what I'm saying is, if you're confronted with it, that decision, you've got problems.
Yeah, you're fucked.
I'm saying this is someone that has that problem in a lot of situations. I'd rather go and snag an Albert Wilson, because if I see Albert Wilson have a good game this week, then I feel good about playing him. So say Devin Funchess comes back week 11, right? And you go and see him put up a decent game, say he catches a touchdown. Maybe you play him week 12 if you absolutely have to, but you're not playing him in week 11. You're talking about week 12, you got to play him. I just think that there are more secure situations you feel better about on that low-end flyer dart throw that feel better, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like, if you're thinking about picking up Devin Funchess as a guy who could, like, you know, be good for you in a couple weeks, like, you're already fucked.
Yeah, because I would love to see him have only two catches for, like, 50 yards and a touchdown, and then see what the hell you're going to do with that the next week.
Yeah, it's not the correct call. I put it in there because I was trying to be cute and I was hoping you would shut me down, and you did.
Okay, good.
Let's move to the Rams. We alluded to it before with Sterling Shepard. The Rams don't know when Brandon Cooks is going to play again. You got to drop him at this point.
Yeah. I would say that you invested so much draft capital in him that I'm going to wait. And as a guy that owns Brandon Cooks, I want to see a little bit more, because based on what we're saying, if in the small chance that he is ever active, he's a guy that you can confidently at least know what his value is, as opposed
to – Can you though?
But I'm saying, so say, who would you drop him for in this situation, right?
Zach
so
like, Pascal.
Yeah, okay, Zach Pascal. But I'm saying that's like an anomaly. That's one. But if we're talking like guys like Albert Wilson or something, so say this week, and I shouldn't – take Zach Pascal, because you're right, that's way better. Say Brandon Cooks actually gets ruled as active tentatively at like noon Eastern Sunday morning. Compared to so many like of the wide receiver fives and wide receiver fours in the world that like you can actually plug and play Brandon Cooks over a lot of dudes like what if Brandon Cooks and AJ Green were both ruled active this week? Who would you rather play?
Oh, it's Brandon Cooks by a long shot.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm not saying that it's wrong to drop him, but I'm saying that the person you're dropping him for at this stage is likely someone that you would never want to play anyway. And that's like the little bit of value that Cooks has left, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's fair.
If Cooks has a chance to be active the rest of the year, he's a better play when he's active than a lot of other guys that don't have injury problems. And I'm not saying that's right or good, but he's got more value than a lot of dudes just based on that.
If you're desperate for a start this week, would you drop Brandon Cooks for Darius Slayton?
If I had no one else to drop in the wide receiver thing and it worked out with what we were saying, then yes.
Okay.
What I'm saying is drop him for a guy that is going to affect your lineup, not your roster. Does that make sense?
What about a Devontae Parker or like an AJ Brown or that kind of thing?
A.J. Brown, no. Devontae Parker, yes, with the Preston Williams thing going on. So even a better question, so to your point of having to drop Brandon Cooks, and I know we're going to talk about him, would you drop Brandon Cooks for Josh Reynolds?
Straight. No, I don't think Josh Reynolds holds any value this year.
But thinking that Brandon Cooks doesn't, I think Josh Reynolds does.
So my thinking there is that they've been running a lot more two tight end, and I feel like they should do that more. I know Josh Reynolds had a good week, like with Brandon Cooks being out 2 weeks ago. I don't necessarily buy that.
See, and again, that's fair, totally, but I'm saying that's something that I've seen before. Josh Reynolds, when Brandon Cooks has been out, has been effective and fantasy-worthy. And coming right off, what did Josh Reynolds do in that game? I think 8 targets, 3 catches.
Yeah, yeah, it was 73 yards
and a touchdown, whatever. But, like, that's something that I see as valuable because I've seen it before. Like, I'm not going to go pick up Paris Campbell and drop Brandon Cooks by any stretch of the imagination.
No, that's definitely fair. I mean,
that's the only thing I'm saying. I'm saying if you're dealing with guys where you're going to drop him for A.J. Brown, I'd rather hold on to Brandon Cooks, and if I find out he's going to be gone for a while, that's just a guy where an active Brandon Cooks, you're going to start over A.J. Brown every single time, right?
Not necessarily.
Okay. And you may be right on that front. That's fine. I'm not saying – I'm not arguing your theory overall. That's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're wrong either there. It's you know, we're dealing with something where it's a completely unknown timetable for return. So that's –
Would you drop Sterling Shepard?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm scared of concussion issues. I think they can pop up at any time. I think they can keep people out very long times. I'm scared of it.
That's fair, but I don't think that there should be hesitancy over Sterling Shepard dropping if you're going to drop Brandon Cooks immediately, if that makes sense.
Because
Brandon Cooks is better and in a better situation.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. That's probably correct, and that's maybe a logical inconsistency that I was having in my head that I have now worked out.
And also, the disclaimer is that your thought process is probably going to work out to be correct. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying that's the way I look at it, dealing with a wide receiver 5.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from Brandon Cooks. Let's talk about Le'Veon Bell. He did not practice on Wednesday with a knee injury. The status for this weekend is up in the air. I would assume he's going to play. I also picked up Ty Montgomery in a couple leagues just to do it. I don't know. Does this mean anything to you?
Yeah, I mean, if you've owned Le'Veon Bell, you've been dealing with a downgrade from where you drafted him the whole way. I'm worried that in a lost season that this is going to happen every single week for the rest of the season, that you don't know what his full capacity is and will they start to preserve him and what will his actual value be going forward, if that makes sense. Why would you put out Le'Veon Bell in a heavy workload anymore as the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason. It's like I said before with A.J. Green, if I'm Le'Veon, I'm going, no, my leg hurts.
And honestly, if I'm the Jets, I'm doing the same thing. Oh, his leg hurts. Like, he's more valuable to you next year than this year.
Yeah, it's we'll see how it sort of goes, but keep an eye on the news in terms of Le'Veon. I think Ty Montgomery should be owned after waivers go through this week, in pretty much every league.
I agree.
All right, going on to DeSean Jackson. He was placed on IR with a core muscle injury, slightly different from the strained abdomen that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
No, I would assume it's the same injury. He only played 4 snaps in his first game back. It is what it is. It seems like DeSean's gone. They signed Jordan Matthews. We gave a big shoulder shrug to that. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, just sorry if you've been dealing with that shit.
I wouldn't want to deal with a core muscle injury. That's why I have a big old gut to prevent that from happening.
None of my muscles are core muscles, but then I think that also means all of my muscles are core muscles.
That's some galaxy brain shit if I've ever heard it. Yeah.
They are all expendable, but also all very important.
All right. Moving on, Malcolm Butler is out for the season with a broken wrist. He is, of course, one of the Titans' cornerbacks. He's been their worst cornerback this year, but they've had a good year in terms of pass defense, so not ideal for them. I don't think this matters too much, but just maybe don't be afraid of the Titans' pass defense if you were before.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's how I would put it.
All right, sweet. That's it for the injuries. I know that took a little while, but we'll be back with some cool shit, some weak shit, some whack-ass backfields, and the Thursday night preview. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you thought about trying sports betting but aren't sure how it'll go? Our friends at FanDuel are giving away a $50 sign-up bonus at letstalkfantasyfootball.com/FanDuel-sportsbook.
And we are back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We do have a lot of things to talk about. I keep saying ladies and gentlemen. I want to change that to everybody, just to be inclusive of everybody. I keep saying that out of habit. But anyway, welcome back, everybody. We got a lot of things still to talk about. We have some cool shit, some weak shit, some whack-ass backfields, and the Thursday night preview. We're going to start with some cool shit. Christian McCaffrey is the coolest shit.
Yeah, I wrote that in there. That is all. You know he's on a historic pace. The reason why I put it there is just I own Christian McCaffrey in one league, and I'm getting a Christian McCaffrey jersey. So I co-own him with one of my friend's dads that has no idea what he's doing, and he like thinks I'm a genius just because we took him third overall. So
you got him at three?
What's up?
You got him at three?
In a full point PPR 12 team league, which is just
fucking donkeys ahead of you, dude. Yeah, fucking exactly. Morons.
Exactly, yeah. But I'll tell you about that team another time. Kittle, Watson, whatever. But yeah, we're in first place by a long shot. But
I'm fanning myself over here. Yeah, I'm fanning myself.
Exactly. But unless you were like really in the really in the know, like McCaffrey wasn't the clear cut number one overall pick, and just like good pay dirt for him. He's going off in a historic way, and just yeah, it's week to week and it's amazing. So he's cool shit.
Yeah, he's actually on pace to break the record for the most fantasy points of all time set by LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006. That's in PPR scoring. But how about it?
Yeah, it's insane. He's going to go for like 400 yards and four touchdowns against the Packers this week. But
probably.
Yeah.
I also made a bet against one of my roommate Corey's friends. We were both hammered, and I made a bet because – I just met the guy and I, you know, talked about how I have a podcast and that kind of thing. And he was like, who do you think is going to be the best player in fantasy this year? I go, Christian McCaffrey. And he goes, McCaffrey, huh? I was like, I'll give you 10-1 odds. He's the highest scoring running back in fantasy football this year. Bets null if he plays less than 14 games. And the guy goes, yeah, sure. How much we talk about? I go 100 on it, 10-1. So if I win, you owe me $1,000. Made the bet, thought everything was square, and apparently the guy doesn't remember making the bet 10 weeks later.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And also, it's funny that McCaffrey may wrap that up in week 14, regardless of health or not. Like,
if I don't get my $1,000, I am going to fly to this guy's city and kill him.
I would just Venmo request him for $1 for 1,000 straight days.
It's unfortunate because I literally knew the guy for that day. That was it. Like he stayed with us for one day, and it was just like we made this bet, which like I am clearly going to win, and he's clearly going to owe me a fucking G. But like, what can you do?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on from McCaffrey. Let's talk about the Seahawks. The Seahawks went nuts this week. Obviously Russell Wilson has been incredible the entire year. Against Tampa Bay, he was going to be nothing less than incredible. But Tyler Lockett had an insane week. DK Metcalf had a great week as well.
Both the best weeks of their careers, respectively. Lockett's a lot longer, but
yeah, I mean, Lockett had like 15 targets this past week, and like
40 PPR points.
Yeah, like So most of that happened in the second half of that game too, because I had a couple daily fantasy lineups where I had Josh Jacobs and Noah Fant going. And in the first half, I was like, I am going to win thousands of dollars. And then like by the time the second half finished, it was like, I am going to win $75 on these lineups.
Right.
but yeah, man, like they went nuts. They're a very, very good team. The thing we need to talk about is Josh Gordon coming back or not coming back, but being integrated into this offense this week. Does that like, are you like a sell high on Lockett or Metcalf or these guys?
I would say Lockett, no, because we've seen him like, I've always been a Lockett like stupid disbeliever, and not in the sense that like, I don't think that he's going to be good or whatever, but like when he was with Doug Baldwin and like when Jimmy Graham was still relevant there, I've always been like, oh, he's a little bit boomer bust, like small guy, whatever. And time in and time out, like consistent week-to-week fantasy starter. I don't think a Josh Gordon-type guy hurts him. I think if anything, it could help him a little bit. and I'm splitting hairs because I think Lockett is pretty much unaffected by the situation around him. DK Metcalf, though, I think could hurt a little bit because I feel like, say, if Gordon got traded to the Seahawks, or not, he wasn't traded, but say if he went to the Seahawks 2 weeks ago and last week against the Bucks was when he first was coming into the fold, I don't know if DK Metcalf has the week that he had. I think Tyler Lockett's a little more unaffected, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think DK's affected more as like sort of the athletic outside receiver, though DK has been really, really great this year. Lockett, yeah, to me is one of those guys that you put in a bucket with Tyreek Hill where it's like normal rules don't apply to him. Where like every week you're like, oh, like Tyreek Hill should regress to the mean. And it's like, no, he's never going to regress to the mean because he's fucking Tyreek Hill. Tyler Lockett, to a lesser extent, I think is like that, where him and Russell Wilson are connected on like a telekinetic level, where they're just, that's just who they are. You know, like Tyler Lockett is going to overperform the baseline wide receiver production as long as he is with Russell Wilson, for the rest of the time that he is with Russell Wilson. So yeah, Lockett's, that's just who he is.
I agree to your point too. And the thing is that Lockett's had a longer career of doing it.
Yeah. Lockett's like been great with him.
Wide receiver four.
And he only has something like 70 targets so far this year, like through like 9 weeks.
Yeah.
That's wild.
He's got three double digit target games and he has in half point PPR at least double digit fantasy points in every single game other than one against, ironically, the Cardinals.
That's really, really funny. But also I think it shows that again, the regular rules don't apply to Tyler Lockett. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Let's talk about the QB streaming pool. So we've had it work out a little bit with guys like Tannehill, Jimmy Garoppolo, who had his best week this past week, Fitzpatrick, who won me a little bit of money on DraftKings. And then you have Jameis as well. Do you trust these guys? And then what do you think about the QB streaming pool going forward?
Yeah, so I put this in there. It's not necessarily that I trust these guys a whole lot going forward, but I think week to week, it's just cool shit, since we're talking cool shit, that you can find these options. So like last week, week 9, top 10 quarterbacks were in there: Jimmy Garoppolo, Matt Stafford, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Kyler Murray, who maybe could be there, but I throw him in selfishly, Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston. Like, just the fact that they're the streaming pool of that, like, you know, 10 to 16 going into each week quarterback actually has been coming through, has made fantasy a lot easier on a lot of people that, you know, like for the first time in years, you wherever your draft capital was spent on Aaron Rodgers, you were sitting him for a while and finding pay dirt like on the waivers. You know what I mean? Like Patrick Mahomes goes down, you can weather that storm. And I just think that's been a pretty cool thing of the fantasy season. As far as trusting these guys going forward, I think that a lot of them are also clear-cut matchup play-based as opposed to,
yes, absolutely,
previous years where, like, I can look at Jameis going against Arizona this next week and be like, this is going to work and it's going to give me minimum 18 points. Like, and I know that to be true. You know, and like, when you played Tannehill 2 weeks ago and you talked up Tannehill a lot, like, that made sense and it happened. And I just think that that's, like, a really cool thing for the year that in the most – normally deep position that can kind of like screw you a little bit, that it's kind of worked out and made sense this year, I feel like, overall.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I have a league. I am currently 8-1 in a 12-team league where I drafted Mitchell Trubisky as my only quarterback. I've been streaming the entire year. I have refused staunchly to trade with other people for quarterbacks simply because I am stubborn and I don't want to admit that I was wrong about being able to stream quarterbacks. I mean, I started Darnold this past week. It was fine. You know, like, streaming quarterbacks has worked this year. And I think it's going to continue to work going through the rest of the way. I am also trusting Darnold going through this week, which we'll see if that works. But
that's – you're crazy. You're crazy.
I'm going back to the well against the fucking Giants, man.
Dude, the Dolphins game wasn't that great. And I also think that it's really funny that, you know, about, like, the whole joke with seeing ghosts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That Patriots game, if I'm not mistaken, his total points was -6.66.
No way.
And that is something – I'm going to double check that.
You're
right
bullshitting
now.
Dude. No way.
I'm going to check it right now, but I'm pretty sure that's true. But just to reiterate the point of what we're saying.
Also, 666 is the number of the devil, not the number of ghosts. So
you no, I know, just, but I'm saying it's all bad fuck stuff. Right, yes, off there. -6.66. I'm just saying, dude, scary shit and spooky. Is this the Halloween podcast today? Spooky, yep. Spooky.
But no, yep. I like Slayer, so fucking whatever, dude.
But to your point, I'm just saying, like you said, you're in a league where you took Trubisky as your only quarterback. I'm in a couple different leagues where I took Mahomes and Kyler Murray, which I don't want to talk about, or I'm in another league where I took Matt Ryan. And if I had not wasted that draft capital there and just semi-correctly streamed the rest of the way, I'd be a much better fantasy team.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I've gotten good weeks out of Tannehill, Daniel Jones, Kyle Allen. I started on his 4-touchdown week. You know, like
Josh Allen was guys picked up, not quite streaming, but like that's how it is. I guess I'm just talking for a theme more going forward of like devaluing quarterbacks in drafts because you strong arm yourself into not making educated decisions.
Yeah, 100%. I am right there with you. Let's move on to Patrick Mahomes, who is possibly coming back this week. He practiced fully today. What do you think about him going forward? I mean, it's going to be him back with Tyreek Hill really for the first time. Obviously that makes a difference. I think a follow-up question to that, and we didn't put it in the outline, but do you buy Kelce like getting ceiling games? Cause he has not gotten those this year.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing I want to say, and this is kind of a cop-out. I think that it's borderline irrelevant. Because if you're a Kelce owner, you absolutely have to play him every single week, week to week. There's nothing.
Correct. Yeah.
There's nothing happening. So if the only thing that's really relevant is at like is the trade game. If he's like a trading, I think that you have to assume that Kelce's ceiling is exactly where you thought it would be when Mahomes comes back. You have to assume that. Could it bite you in the ass? Yes, but. If you own Kelce and people are trying to trade for him, you should value him as slightly below what you drafted him for, I think.
Yeah, don't take discounts on him, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like a slight discount in like the way that you would like value a Zach Ertz like or Evan Ingram week one this year. But like don't be like I say that because I want to say don't be afraid to part ways with him if the trade is right.
Would you take Leonard Fournette for Travis Kelce?
Yes.
Okay, I would too.
Yes, I would do that. I would do that for sure. Would you take James Conner for Travis Kelce?
No.
Okay. Again, the team, you know, draw up matters in that a little bit, but I'm saying that all things equal. I'm valuing Travis Kelce as if he was like a fourth or fifth round draft pick this year.
So let's talk about this actually. Of the tight ends, say Kittle, Kelce, Ertz, I think Waller you can throw in that conversation. Like where are you ranking these guys?
Like if I knew if I had like a Biff like Back to the Future 2 knowledge of this going back to the draft or like going
like,
forward.
Like right now for the next several weeks until the season's over, what are the tight ends that you would prefer to have like over anyone? Cause
I would say I go Kittle, Waller, because Waller's floor has been unprecedented.
Yes.
It's been ridiculous and something that has not happened with any tight end this year. So I would go Kittle, Waller, Kelce, Hunter Henry, Ertz, Evan Ingram, if healthy.
Okay. I think I agree with you on Kittle being number one. I think I would put Kelce number two.
That's fine. But chasing that upside?
Yes. I'm assuming that he is going to hit the upside that he hasn't hit so far.
Okay. And I feel like even if he hits that upside only at 75, 80% going forward, I still think it's enough to make him that two.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just – I'm trying to establish that because I think that's fine. I just think at this point with any tight end, and especially if you're a Zach Ertz owner, you know that floor is everything, and Darren Waller's floor is unprecedented for a lot of different positions, let alone tight end.
And speaking of Zach Ertz really hit what like we kind of expected of him this week. And I think like he's been on the bad end of luck for most of the season. And I think this is sort of not the norm for him, but I think this was sort of him getting back to normal in terms of making up for the production that he hasn't given for this year. Um, I I really thought it was going to happen with DeSean Jackson. But I mean, even in this game, him and Dallas Goedert actually played the exact same amount of snaps at 79%. Zach Ertz has been regression waiting to happen. Do you think this continues the rest of the season?
Again, I say that this is is going to be more the norm than it was for the first like 7 or 8 weeks. I don't think that, it's going to be where you drafted him. I don't think it's going to be like a fifth or sixth round drafted tight end, and he went earlier in a lot of situations. What scared me about Zach Ertz when he was in his slump was that he did not look like he was playing well. Like, you were watching him in the eye test, it was like Zach Ertz is not a good football player.
It looked like Dallas Goedert was the better tight end on the field.
Yeah, and that's different where Travis Kelce, where it was just like, oh, you're in a bad situation. Hopefully, like, Matt Moore finds you, or, like, Mahomes is just doing whatever, and there's a lot of mouths to feed. Like, Zach Ertz scared me for that reason. I think that this is more the end of the spectrum that will happen going forward. But, again, I think that you're not going to get what you bought all the way. Maybe one of two games, but hopefully this was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think I'm buying into Ertz the rest of the year. You know, the regression in terms of production for his amount of targets as well as touchdowns was sort of coming. I don't expect this week to happen every week, but like, I think Ertz. Well, so I think with Jackson out the rest of the year, I think Ertz and Goddard are both viable tight ends going forward.
So who do you think is more of a sell high candidate based on today, Kelce or Ertz?
Ertz, because Kelce didn't have any of his ceiling games.
Okay. I agree. I'm just curious. But I think, like, what do you think is more fool's gold would be Zach Ertz?
Yeah.
Because I feel know. Like Mahomes coming back as, like, a fool's gold situation for Kelce.
Right, someone factoring that in too much is what you're saying.
Yeah, right, that's what I mean. So, like, who's more fool's gold? I say Zach Ertz would be my choice just because he's had the best, like, catch percentage that he has all year, like, over, like, 5 targets, like, 9 catches, 11 targets, I believe, last time. And, like, he's just not – he's had games where he's not looked that good.
Yeah.
So – that's my thing. But again, I'm fine with both of them. And I think if you've owned Zach Ertz this long, keep riding it out. But
yeah,
I'm more believer in Kelce.
I'm on both of them as top 5 tight ends the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So it is.
I'd rather have
Waller
than both, though.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I'm not prepared to argue with it either, if that makes sense.
The reason I say that is because Waller had a dank floor and was pretty, pretty good without having a touchdown for like 8 weeks and was dependent on nothing other than, like, consistent volume. And if anything, I think his better days are to come.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, recency bias is telling me that's not true. And, again, that's recency bias. Like, that's the past couple of weeks. So,
yeah. Statistically regressing to the mean, I think Darren Waller is more positive than the other two.
Yeah, I agree with that. Moving to the Redskins, Darius Geis should be back coming up. Are you picking him up, or are you just a fuck this whole situation type of person?
Yeah, I put that there just because I was big on him going into the draft, and it is good that he's coming back. I just wanted to kind of get your take, too, on, like, how you think the Redskins are going to manage this. And the only reason that I want to bring it up is because they've moved on to the Dwayne Haskins era. And if you remember week 1, the Redskins, when Geis was active before he got hurt, Adrian Peterson was a healthy scratch. So I wonder if they're going to, like – maybe, and again, if Geis is a starting running back, even if it's on the Redskins, that's an extreme value when we're talking about guys like Kalen Bolajuwon-Francois or whatever we were talking about before. That, like, I want to know where you value Geis, and I think that he should be picked up and owned in a bunch of leagues solely because he has that starter value. But what are your thoughts here? Just that my thing is that I just remember AP being a healthy scratch when he was there, and I know the Redskins love him.
I'm not fucking touching it. I'm just not doing it.
Okay.
Like, I'm staying away from the Redskins.
Okay, fair. But say for someone that, like, doesn't have any sort of luxury or running back, or I don't want to get into the keeper conversation because that's more just, like, directing the conversation towards my gain of what I'm saying. But, like, I just think that if Darius Geis comes back in week 11 and has, like, 15 carries, that's a lot more valuable than –
so if I'm the Redskins, I know that Darius Geis is good because he is good. And, like, that's sort of just a known fact. Why would I make him prove it over the past over the next like five games or whatever. Like if I'm the Redskins, I'm giving Adrian Peterson the carries. I don't care about what Darius Geis does because he doesn't matter until next year. I know they're not a rational franchise, so maybe that's not a thing that is correct, but like,
I guess I just look at it as, if you bring in Dwayne Haskins right now, it's the same sort of like ideology of like how you look at that. And I just look at like, you don't want Darius Geis, like I know that they view him as an integral part of their franchise going forward. And you don't want some of his first touches to be week one of next year. So I think that like 4 or 5 weeks of having him play this year in a season that's inconsequential is beneficial to whatever the fuck they're trying to do, whether it's smart or not. And my point is that compared to a lot, and running back is so thin that if he comes back and he gets 15 carries, is he not ranking in the top 40 running backs to own?
Yes, but I can't buy that until I see it.
Yeah, fair. Totally fair. Just wanted to bring it up for that reason alone.
Definitely a fair call on your part. Let's move on to weak shit. Minshew Mania. It's done. It's over. Nick Foles is going to be the starter when they return from bye in week 11. I could say this is a little bit of recency bias because he had the worst game of his fucking season against the Texans in London. But how do you deal with this? And then also, how do you deal with like DJ Shark or like Chris Conley or Leonard Fournette? Like, does this affect these guys for you?
So I'll be honest, I was one of the few people, and like not correctly so, that didn't give a fuck about the whole Minshew situation. Like, I think that if you're a DJ Shark owner, Chris Conley owner, and you were rolling these guys out, Nick Foles is a more high upside quarterback situation for all these guys. I think he's a better quarterback. I don't know if he'll yield better results right off the bat compared to Minshew's best, but there's no reason that you're going to be like really, you're going to be like, oh, I started DJ Shark when he was with Gardner Minshew, but now that Nick Foles is the quarterback, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a one-for-one swap. Like, I don't – in terms of like a guy who owns like a ton of DJ Shark, like, I don't care. Like, this is fine. Yeah. Like, I project it the exact same way.
Yeah, I look at a net zero as being the worst situation about it. You know what I mean? Like, I think it can only be better.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, Minshew was better than he was bad, if that makes sense. Like he was more good than bad. Yeah, I mean, Foles is what he is. He also has a dick that apparently hangs below his knees. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I have Snapchat.
Yeah, dude. I would like to see that. I would like to see Nick Foles' dick.
I have. I'll screenshot you. Got you.
All right. So I mean, it is what it is at that point. But you know, there's a. Like, I think you continue playing Jaguars as you played Jaguars, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, moving on to the Jets. They still have this dank schedule coming up, but, like, man, they looked terrible this week. Are you buying it? I know I said I was buying it still with Darnold. I know I'm a fucking moron, but are you buying it?
Here's the thing, man. You can't do it against the Dolphins. I just can't. How can you not? Or how can you, rather? Sorry.
Against the Giants.
But I mean, I just can't. Again, you'll probably be right. I just can't do it. If you, and especially if you're someone that bought into it, like say you're someone that started Darnold in what's perceivably the best matchup with the Dolphins, like Adam Gase revenge game, you're thinking just, dude, they're lost all the way around. They don't, there's some funny videos we talked in the last pod or the earlier in the podcast of that offensive line. They are just garbage, dude. Not blocking anybody. I don't see what gives you any reason to have faith in it other than theory and hopeful theory.
And that's the only reason that I do, and that's what I'm still buying is the theory, because the Giants' defense is absolutely terrible. I'm buying it for one more week, and if it doesn't work this week, then I'm out. I'm buying it for this week.
But this is the week – like we're getting to the point of the season where you can't afford this shit anymore. Like, because if you've bought into Darnold, like you say, one more week, if you've had any stake in these Jets, you'd be getting fucked and fucked and fucked. So how can you risk it again? You have to move on, is my thought. If you started Sam Darnold the last 2 weeks, how can you do it again?
Again, I'm working from places where I'm like doing pretty good.
So. Right, exactly. Or a daily situation. Fine, I get
that. Yeah, like in daily, he's going to be super underowned, and like I'm going to do that.
Yeah, daily, that's fine. But like if you started Sam Darnold any of the last 2 weeks in a meaningful fantasy league and you do it again, shame on you, dude. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to like stay with it. I'm going to do it because I'm a stupid person and I'm stubborn.
You're going to end up being right, which sucks, but...
I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. But yeah, it's tough to deal with that. Let's move to the Vikings. Amir Abdullah outsnapped Alexander Mattison and caught a touchdown. Fuck, were we wrong?
You put this here on purpose, I think. I think you put it on purpose.
I mean, so I was a little like the Vikings in general. So one, Stephon Diggs had a bad game. The only people that like did well were like Olabisi Johnson and Irv Smith, like that kind of thing.
Did Kyle Rudolph catch a touchdown? I think, yeah.
Let me double check. Kyle Rudolph got a touchdown.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. Like that's the kind of week we're dealing with. And like the whole Vikings team was just like a fucking schmoz of like a result. So like, how do we deal with that?
I honestly don't know. And I think you put this here because I said the Alexander Mattison thing last week where I thought in desperation that he could be a decent play even with Dalvin Cook healthy. I honestly don't know what to do about any of this. Anybody that you played last week, there's no reason that you're not going to play him going forward. You got to roll out Diggs. Hopefully you didn't play Mattison, but he's still the clear handcuff, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Abdullah's not someone who should be owned or played for sure. No. Like, I would think Mattison is still the guy. Also, it was bad game script for that sort of situation. If they're going to be winning, then Mattison will be the guy who will be in later in the game.
Yeah, like, I mean, you have to say Dalvin Cook in practice this week, knock on wood, like, no contact tears his ACL. Alexander Mattison's a top 10 running back for the rest of the year.
Yeah, 100%.
You're not questioning that. So he's the better own. But yeah. I think the Vikings, I think this game is a wash as far as like what you take from it, and everything you thought was true should still remain. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I'm just skeptical of all their receivers. You know, it is what it is. But
fine. So if you're in a situation where like Diggs is your wide receiver three, like, would you start, like, Zach Pascal over Diggs this week?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. But, like, that's the fringe that I'm talking about, is that you probably have to make the same decisions and just do it.
Yeah, Diggs should still be your guy. I mean, if you're looking in terms of, like, air yards, Diggs is a top 10 air yards guy for the entire year. Like,
yeah,
it's something that's – it's not great, but it should still kind of work out for you. Right. Moving on to the Packers, Devontae Adams in his first week back was kind of disappointing. I mean, he has no touchdowns through 5 active games. This also was disappointing for Aaron Jones, who didn't really put it together like Jamal Williams did. Aaron Jones did not. How do you, like, parse your way through this Packers passing game?
So I'm worried about the Packers passing game, and I think Jamal Williams is, like, ready to be factored in as part of the passing game as opposed to the running game, as we spoke like last week, that they can both have success in a good game for the Packers. If you watch this game, I think it's a bit of an anomaly for the Packers in the sense that they just looked terrible in every like aspect of the game all around. My one concern is though that we've been conditioned in fantasy football over the last like 10 years that there's going to be at least like 2 or 3 Packers wide receiver tight end combos that like are relevant in fantasy, right? And when Devontae Adams went down, people were scrambling for like the MVSs of the world and like Alan Lazard's, and you know, Jake Kumerow had flashes. We're in a situation where what worries me is that when I've watched every Packers game, the Packers offense has looked the worst every game that Devontae Adams has been active.
That's true.
And that's kind of like a problem. And he has no touchdowns at all this year. He's been completely underwhelming. And you would think, like before, with what we were talking about with like, who was it where you said, if AJ Green comes back, maybe that can help out Tyler Boyd, right? Mm-hmm. Davante Adams coming back, if you were an MVS guy or a Alan Lazard guy or whatever, you would think that Davante Adams coming back would at least help that. It's made all of them negligible. You have to start Davante Adams, obviously, but there is no – I would say these are the Packers pass catchers that you start. It goes Davante Adams begrudgingly because he's done nothing, Jamal Williams, and that's it, and then Aaron Jones and maybe Aaron Rodgers in the right matchup. Yeah, so I guess I put that here because the offense doesn't look good with Davante Adams there, especially with the target share there, and it's concerning.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Jones was like a stud for the past couple of weeks, and he just got completely blanked this week. It's weird to kind of parse through, you know?
Yeah, I think Aaron Jones, I should put that as a wash, I would say, because the whole team was so bad and they were playing from so behind that I don't think that speaks to his value, and that won't happen a lot as frequently.
He has a lower floor because he splits those carries and those snaps with Jamal Williams. But
right, exactly. And they normally have been playing ahead a little bit more, and that gives him more of a factor role. But apart from Davante, I guess my point is that no secondary Packers pass catcher in the receiving tight end game should be owned at all.
Yeah, completely agreed on that. Let's move to the Bears. Allen Robinson had a very, very bad game. Is he benchworthy?
So I put this a little bit emotionally, but I just thought he was going to have a big week against the Eagles, and he didn't. And the Bears are so defunct right now that I want to ask you kind of how you feel and value these Bears.
I am going right back to Allen Robinson, and I have no regrets doing so.
Okay, that's fine. That's fair. I'm overreacting, I think, because I really just wanted a huge game out of him, and one catch for 6 yards like made me really upset in a lot of ways. And the Bears look fucking terrible, dude.
Yeah. I mean, dude, my best DraftKings lineup had Taylor Gabriel in it, and I was just
so,
like, oh.
That was going to be my next point, is that I think that Taylor Gabriel is a more valuable own than Allen Robinson.
And, no, hard no on that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I do, especially with where you have Allen Robinson. I feel like Taylor Gabriel has a more home run situation. I don't know. I'm going off emotion here. You're right.
I think that's he has more of a home run aspect to him. But I mean, outside of this past week, Allen Robinson has been a very consistent week to week wide receiver with one of the worst quarterbacks in the league.
You're right.
Allen Robinson, I think, is a guy you write this week off and you continue chugging forward with him because he's getting almost double digit targets a week, and you just can't bench that kind of volume.
Okay, you're right. You talked me off the ledge, and I needed to hear that rationality.
All right, let's move to Odell Beckham, because this one I have no idea. Do you keep rolling him out at this point?
I start to say no, because he's getting into what we talked about with running backs earlier, is that bad defenses have his number, and he's not doing well against predictably bad matchups, you know what I mean? And I think he's getting to a point where he's like a wide receiver three.
I mean, dude, they're giving Jarvis Landry as much target work and as much air yard work as Odell Beckham. So they're obviously fucking lost. The offense has no idea how to deal with like the two of these together. Yeah, I don't think you can do it. I'm not willing to start him. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, people I'd be willing to start. So, DJ Shark or Odell Beckham?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's crazy that is not matchup dependent, and I'm picking DJ Shark.
Yeah, it's DJ Shark every single week.
And you know what, too? As a guy that, like, only owns few shares in Odell Beckham, as opposed to other situations. Like, so let's take the Allen Robinson situation. If I were to sit Allen Robinson this week and he ends up going off, I'm going to be pissed at myself. If I sit Odell and he has a really good game, I'm not going to be that mad, because he's done nothing.
Yeah, I'm Allen Robinson over Odell Beckham. I might even be like Zach Pascal over Odell
Beckham. I was just going to say that and thought it was too ballsy after my Allen Robinson thing, and that you were kind of on the logical sense of that, but I think I'm right there.
Devontae Parker, Odell Beckham. How is that a question?
You see, that's the point. I think that I'm leaning Parker. And
me
that's
too.
Crazy. And that says everything right there. Granted, you're probably not in that situation or have that luxury.
Yeah, I mean, also we're like drunk, but like fucking who cares?
No, I think, you know, it's like, I mean, hey, man, if I told you this before the week, every single week but one for the last 7 weeks, we would have been right.
Yeah.
For a lot of these people. So I just want to tell people you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. It could be over. And Odell's one of those guys where if things get weird, it makes more sense to sit him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's completely true.
Juju Smith-Schuster or Odell Beckham in a vacuum?
Juju.
And that's crazy because Juju's had a fucking awful year too. So.
Yep. Okay. So that's where we're at. I'm going to say let us take a quick break and we'll be back with Whack-Ass Backfields and the Thursday night game.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, home of the brutally honest fantasy advice you've always needed.
Hey guys, welcome back. We got two more segments left. Apologize for the break there. I don't know what to tell you in terms of a reason. We're going into Whack-Ass Backfields, and then we got the Thursday night game, and that'll be about it. We'll let you guys go after that. But so, in terms of Whack-Ass Backfields, we are going to start with a backfield that might not be whack-ass. Are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers putting their faith in Ronald Jones going forward?
Yeah, I feel like this has always been the most whack backfield. Most whack-ass backfield, I should say. But for the first time, Bruce Arians actually came out and said that Ronald Jones is going to be the clear-cut starter going forward. And he actually cited he has been the most effective, this paraphrasing, and the most explosive, which is pretty good. We saw in the last week, I believe he had, you see, I had written down here, 42 total snaps, 53% of the snaps compared to Peyton Barber's 11. Which is a drastic shift, and that's only 14% of the snaps. Drastic shift in the snap share. The Buccaneers' offense has always been fantasy worthy. On the running back side, not really, because it's always been muddled. I think if a clear-cut guy comes out of there, that it could be like a high-end running back three situation, flex consideration.
Yeah, I mean, he got vultured by Dare Ogunbowale this past week. In terms of the running backs, like touch shares, Ronald Jones had 20, Peyton Barber had 4, Dare had 2. Like, Ronald Jones is the guy. And, like, they're not a bad offense. This is a guy who needs to be owned, started, like, all the things you can think of. Like, he's it. He's it this year going forward.
Yeah, and they go up against the Cardinals this week. Let me look. I was looking at the rest of their schedule going forward. It's just like you're probably a guy that – like there are people out there that drafted Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones, so now you finally have some clarity to where these guys are actually usable. So I think that this is a backfield that's actually getting less whack.
Completely. Talking of the Cardinals, David Johnson should be back this week. He said he was going to. They obviously just brought in Kenyon Drake as well. Is this backfield whack or less whack? I have no idea what to do with this backfield.
Well, as a guy that owns David Johnson and Chase Edmonds everywhere, this backfield has been fucking whack since that whole debacle of the David Johnson active two snaps thing. Chase Edmonds went off.
Do you think Kenyon Drake is going to like play a part here?
I honestly have no idea because I think that I don't know anything anymore with that whole situation. If David Johnson comes back, it's his backfield completely. I would think that I honestly I don't know how to value Kenyon Drake whatsoever, but you have to agree if David Johnson comes back, he's especially with no Chase Edmonds, it's his, right?
Yeah, he has to be the number one there, but I think like the other guys like could be factors there.
So I'll say there's always been a secondary running back factor to David Johnson, but I don't think like a healthy Chase Edmonds and a healthy Kenyon Drake like dig into David Johnson's workload, a healthy David Johnson's workload too much compared to one of them, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, yeah, it's difficult to say. I have a very hard, like a very hard way of like saying an opinion on that because just it's so difficult, you know,
like you're thinking that's what may happen as a fantasy owner. This week, if David Johnson, Chase Edmonds, and Kenyon Drake were all active, you have to be under the assumption that David Johnson is the same as he was week 2 and 3, right? You have to assume that. You have to play it that way.
Yeah, but they brought in another guy. Like, they traded another guy to do
right, but that's when like both those guys were completely out and they got like Zach Zenner and dudes like that. I'm just saying that whatever the entity was that Chase Edmonds was to David Johnson in week four, which was definitely a valuable entity, I think that that is the role that is split as opposed to David Johnson's role of the number one being cut into, all things being healthy.
That makes okay, sense. That's fair. You know what I mean? That's definitely
I think
fair.
That as a fantasy owner, that may not be right, but I think that that's how you have to play it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. That makes sense to me. Let's move to the Patriots. The backfield continues to be extremely whack. They got Rex Burkhead back healthy this week, which means Sony Michel got no passing down work. For me, it's James White, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think you were going to say that. I agree. I've never been a Sony Michel believer. He's only got three games where he finished 10-plus half-point PPR points, and that's against the Dolphins, the Giants, and the Jets. His single-digit fantasy games were against Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, which isn't that great. It feels like as they play good teams, Sony Michel gets phased out a little bit, and the Patriots' upcoming schedule is – let me see. I had it written down. It's like Houston, Dallas.
It's not good.
A lot of good teams coming up, and I think as they get into games where it's more of a shootout mentality or a little more competitive, that you see what we saw against Baltimore, and Michelle gets phased out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle, when Burkhead was hurt, was getting, like, involved in the pass game in the offense. With Burkhead back healthy, he's not having that happen, and he shouldn't be played anymore.
Yeah.
James White in PPR is really the only Patriots running back play. And I think that's probably going to continue the entire way through. Sorry, I'm like hiccuping.
Yeah.
You want to hear something funny? I'm watching the end of the Warriors Rockets game, that kind of thing. And we have Zaza Pachulia as one of like the in-studio analysts or whatever. It's like, that's Zaza fucking Pachulia. God damn.
Sexy.
Absolutely terrible.
It's like having me on a fantasy podcast.
Yeah, it really is. I can't believe I was on that channel, too, because I was not just on ESPN. So the Bucks should be playing. Yeah, the Bucks are playing the Clippers now. All right. Anyway, let's continue. The Lions, also whack. What do we do here? Do we play anyone? Because I don't think we do.
I want no part of any of it. That's all I wanted to say. Ty Johnson was a huge pickup. You shouldn't have bought in like that. He's getting 62% of the snaps. He only had 9 carries last week. JD McKissick gets the touchdown. Good luck with that shit. I mean, that's a matchup with the Raiders where theoretically, if you're going to start those guys, it makes some like sense there, I guess. Sort of, but just I don't want to touch it. I don't want to.
Yeah, there's no point to do it. It doesn't make any sense. The only people in the Lions' offense should be Galladay, Jones, and Amendola. That's about it. The Steelers, do they qualify as a whack ass backfield? I mean, Connor might come back this week. Otherwise, Jalen Samuels would be the guy in PPR leagues. He was great this week. In non PPR leagues, he was barely a factor.
Yeah, and he was getting what's his name? I can't think of it now. Trey Edwards? Is it Edwards?
Yeah, Trey Edwards had like a couple carries too that were pretty good.
He had like 12 carries. I think he out-carried Jalen Samuels. He's also banged up a little bit. I guess my point is like with Connor should be back, but his questionable status, I guess. We saw Snell also like work into the factor when he was gone. Is that how do you own these guys? Jalen Samuels is a must-own, not necessarily a must-start. But how do you, value these other dudes with the speculative James Conner status? You should only own any of these people if you're willing to start him at this stage in the season.
I mean, Samuel should be a guy that you own, but, like, James Conner could completely fuck that. Like, you have to have a backup plan.
Yeah, and, like, I think if James Conner comes back, Jalen Samuels is still a worthy own. But I think the other guys, unless you've – feel like you'll play them in a James Conner absence, don't even bother in the same way you wouldn't with the Lions back.
Yeah. And I mean in Jalen Samuels like week where he was supposed to be a thing, like he was still just a low volume target, like, or not low, low volume, low A dot target, like going up the field. Like, that was it pretty much. So don't buy into it too much was what I would say. Let's move to the Chiefs. Is Damian Williams back after this week? Like, he had the majority of the snaps and the targets and the carries for the Chiefs running backs. I'm still on the I don't give a fuck type of situation. Is that correct?
So I have a confession to make real quick, is that I have owned before this year a Chiefs running back in more leagues than I haven't every single year for like the last 7 years. Like,
Kareem and it Hunt, probably worked out.
Spencer Ware, Charkandrick West, like all the way back to fucking like Larry Johnson days, honestly.
This year, is the first year where it hasn't worked out.
Yeah. So, and I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what any of those stats are. I have not looked at it at all. It's the one thing in fantasy football that I just have not paid attention to in any capacity. I have no opinions.
All right.
That's all I can
say. Well, my opinion is Damian Williams is not back, and you should not play him.
I thought he was coming back based on what you were saying.
No. My opinion is it's fucking fool's gold. There you go. I think that's pretty much all you need to know. Let's move to the Browns. Nick Chubb has been ceding receiving work to Dontrell Hilliard. He only had 60% of the snaps this week, and now Kareem Hunt comes back. Was I correct for trading Nick Chubb 3 weeks ago? Please tell me that I was.
The fact that he had a lame week last week, no. I'm going to say no. Just because I'm a huge Nick Chubb believer, you might be. I don't care about Kareem Hunt at all.
If they're not going to give him the passing down work, though, then he's fucked.
Yeah, and you know what sucks, too, is that, like, I drafted Nick Chubb a lot and love Nick Chubb on the, like, theory that the Browns would be slightly relevant. And the fact that they're, like, pretty much not, like, 2-6 or whatever the fuck. We're both, like, just hiccuping and burping now at the end of this. But the fact that,
yes,
the fact that they're like not is the one thing that is bad for Nick Chubb's value. So like I don't know what your deep what was the detail of that trade. Just give me that real quick.
What trade?
Your Nick Chubb trade.
My Nick Chubb trade? Oh, did you trade
him 3 weeks ago?
Yeah. This was a very, very crazy trade. So it was I traded Nick Chubb, Chris Godwin, and DeSean Jackson for Saquon Barkley straight up.
Oh, I hate that.
And I'm not wrong.
No, you're not. That's why I paused. You're not wrong. I just hate it. Because in theory, the thing that sucks is that in theory, Nick Chubb was supposed to be the next Saquon Barkley. Which is not going. And then DeSean Jackson is literally zero. And then Chris Godwin has been a victim of Mike Evans being Mike Evans now.
Right. So my thinking was that Nick Chubb was not going to be the Nick Chubb that he had been to that point of the year, like going forward. My thinking was also that Chris Godwin would not be the number one wide receiver in fantasy football because that's what he was at that point. And then DeSean Jackson, it was literally like I proposed the trade. And the guy came back and goes, give me DeSean Jackson too. And I was like,
first off, fuck that.
Fucking fine. I don't care. You know,
no, fuck that dude. Cause I was just going to say that like, say put DeSean Jackson away. What I love about fantasy football and people that know what they're doing is that like on paper, all across the board, everyone would say to you like bad trade.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's really not that bad of a trade.
And also part of this context too, I already had Christian McCaffrey. I was trying to get Saquon and McCaffrey on the same team.
See, that's a good trade. And I think it's okay now. Fine. But I just love Chubb and I'm wrong. And this is why I don't win and you win. So, but whatever. I don't think Kareem Hunt factors in. I don't want to factor him in at all. The receiving game is a thing that I wonder is more preservation. And,
I mean, Chubb has lost a lot of receiving work over the past couple of weeks. So,
but let me ask you this. Where you drafted Chubb, you assumed that he was not getting that receiving work already.
Right, that's true. You would think that.
So, and he wasn't really in the beginning. Hilliard was kind of factoring in, and then it just became all Chubb. But
yes.
No, I think you're right. I think that Chubb is still a low-end running back one, though, all the way, even when the Browns are bad.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. I don't think that's the wrong thing.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about the Thursday night game. This is the last thing we're going to talk about. We got the Los Angeles Chargers against the Oakland Raiders. I really wish I was going to this game. I think it would be fun. I just made plans today with one of my coworkers who's a big Raiders fan that next year he's getting married in October. So we're doing his bachelor party in Vegas and going to see a Vegas Raiders game.
Oh, that's
so fucking pumped. He's a big Raiders fan too. Like, I'm so fucking pumped.
That's awesome. I just made a bunch of plans with a lot of people now that I'm back in New York that asked me to go to the Packers at the Giants game Thanksgiving weekend. And I just made a bunch of plans to not. Because it's so cold, dude. Outside is so cold.
Dude, crazy. The one thing we looked up about the stadium in Las Vegas was you can't like gamble in the stadium. I was like, what the fuck's the point of the stadium? If I can't make halftime bets, like what the fuck is the point?
Right, it's worthless.
But anyway, the Thursday night game is the Raiders against the Chargers. I think this is a start everyone game.
See, I think that this is a start everyone that you were already starting game.
Okay.
So, like I say on the Chargers side, like, so Rivers is a definite start, which is like a fringe start going forward. And then Gordon, Eckler, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, right? You start Mike Williams?
Yes. And I think I would start him over Keenan Allen because Keenan Allen has been a fucking bust the past couple weeks.
Okay. Just, that's, yeah. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just shocked by it. So, okay. That's all I got. I just Mike Williams too boomer bust. I'm still gonna trust Keenan Allen.
I think Keenan Allen is also a boomer bust. I think both of them are very, very boomer bust, and I would rather play both of the running backs and Hunter Henry. But like I don't think Mike Williams is that much like crazier of a start than Keenan Allen.
Okay. That's fine. Cause I mean I'm down on Keenan Allen overall and you gotta play him. So
his last good week was like week 3.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. You're right. It just sounds crazy when I first hear it.
But that's definitely fair. That's definitely fair.
So you're starting Mike Williams though with confidence in like a 10-team league where if he's your wide receiver 4 or 5, like you're throwing him in there over.
No problem. Yes.
Mike Williams or OBJ?
Mike Williams.
Okay. Again, crazy conversation, but
yeah, really, we have to have that conversation.
We're fine. All right, again, that there's like a 75% chance that's the right call. I think yeah. So. All right, Raiders side of the ball. What do you think about Tyrell? Is the one guy that I think is a. Here's what I want to say. So let's just put it out there. Carr, you like in a start stream yes. Start. So Josh Jacobs, obviously. My two questions is this, and it's not just for this game, but for season long. It's like, so Tyrell Williams has always been – he's been incredibly – he's honestly I think one of the more valuable players in fantasy football before last week in the sense that every single week he had between like 40 and 80 yards and a touchdown every single week until last week. Mm-hmm. And I think he put up like 4 for 48 and no touchdowns, right? Which is fine. That's the risky run. But this was the first time that I felt like Hunter Renfrow was actually a big threat to that and a reason why that happened. What are your thoughts with that? You're the Raider fan.
I think Hunter Renfrow has been much more involved in the offense the past couple weeks, and I am not opposed to playing Hunter Renfrow. I don't think it's shocking if he gets like a touchdown at the end of the week. That being said, I think the three players in the offense are still Josh Jacobs, Darren Waller, and then Tyrell Williams. But Hunter Renfrow as a play or as a guy who, you know, there's 6 teams on the bye this week. That's tough. If you really need a wide receiver, Hunter Renfrow is not a bad call at all. Like, he's a guy, he's not necessary. He doesn't have a good floor, but his ceiling is 17 points. And that might be worth it.
Okay. So just to reiterate, because I don't think I'm in any leagues where Hunter Renfrow is owned. You're saying it's okay to pick him up and start him?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. My personal feeling is that his ceiling is definitely what you said it is. And I think that if I had to weigh them against each other, that Tyrell Williams' 7-point PPR or 8-point PPR floor is more guaranteed than Hunter Renfrow's like 14-point ceiling. Like, if you wanted to weigh Tyrell Williams against Mike Williams for me, I could say that Mike Williams' 23-point ceiling is better. But
wait, yeah, did I not make that clear? Is that
you did? I'm just reiterating. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. Don't get pissed at me because it's the end of the podcast.
Hey, fuck you, asshole!
You got your hands back in a V behind your head right now, and you're looking at NBA on the video chat already. Watch the Bucks. Don't fucking fade out on me. All right. Not gonna fucking stand for it. Yes, you made it clear, but I just wanted people to know that they like shouldn't necessarily. They need to know what they're doing, picking up and starting Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a recommended play, but if you're super desperate, if you're in the bear suit and your girlfriend is the May Queen,
no, don't be bringing up midsummer references, dude. I'm going to throw up. Oh, my God. We're too drunk now. You're doing that to me? Andy, pick this game.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am picking the Raiders. How about it? Rogers, what do you want?
I'm picking the Chargers just because you're rubbing me wrong.
All right. Hopefully you guys get the best Voncast of all time tomorrow. If not, I apologize. For tonight, this has been Walsh and Rogers. We've had a great time. And we'll talk to you later. So for Rogers, I am Walsh. Later, podcast.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.